Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. This is a position that no one wants to be put in. However, many of us are put in this position. Mom or dad, grandma or grandpa, maybe a relative, a husband or a wife, is in the hospital and then in the nursing home, and things get worse and they go downhill, and pretty soon the questions begin to occur. How much longer can we afford this? How much longer can we put up with a day-by-day wearing away and erosion of this person's dignity, comparisons between the health and vigor they used to enjoy and what they have become? Do you hear it in that question? The dehumanization of people as they end their lives and draw near to the end of their lives. We stop talking about people as who they are and now start talking about them as what they've become. That's only the first step down a very slippery slope, folks. One that ends in euthanasia but does not stop there. Euthanasia is just a fancy term for a good death. But are the advocates of euthanasia today really advocating good death? What is a good death? What is a death with dignity? We'll talk about all of that tonight on Issues Etc. Wesley Smith is our guest. We are coming to you live on this Sunday evening, July the 20th. Now, if you have a question or a comment or a personal story to share about euthanasia and assisted suicide, feel free to give us a call, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727, or you can post a message on our Issues Etc. forum. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section, you'll find our Issues Etc. forum. Post your question or comment there, issuesetc.org. Our guest in this hour of the program, Wesley Smith. He's Senior Fellow for the Discovery Institute, an attorney for the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide. He's author of several books, including Forced Exit, The Slippery Slope from Assisted Suicide to Legalized Murder. Wesley joins us from Oakland, California. Wesley, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Good evening, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Wesley, what is death with dignity?
You know, that's a term that gets thrown around an awful lot. The people who support euthanasia, assisted suicide, and some other agendas such as futile care theory, which I hope we'll discuss, which basically says that doctors have the right to refuse wanted life-sustaining treatment based on their perception of the quality of the patient's life, say that if you are elderly, if you are dying, if you are profoundly disabled, perhaps even less disabled, that your life may not be dignified, but what would be dignified would be your death. Now, if we go down that road and accept the idea that there is anybody whose life is not dignified, then what we are doing to people who are going through that extremis, through that difficulty is not the same thing as undignified. We are telling them, you know, you look to people and you look at people's faces to see a reflection of yourself, right? If we make faces at people, if we scrunch up our faces, If we say through our facial expression or our body language, "you," then it's not that they don't have dignity. It's that we have told them they don't have dignity. It seems to me that a real death with dignity is a compassionate death. What does that mean? It is one, compassion means to suffer with. It means that each and every one of us, if we're going to be compassionate about someone who is dying or somebody who is going through an extreme difficulty, compassion means we suffer with that person. We don't shunt them aside. We don't give them an overdose of poison. We take some of that pain and that difficulty on our own shoulders and help them move on, carry on with their life until natural death comes. I was talking to somebody once who told me an interesting story. He said that his aunt, very elderly aunt, was in a nursing home and was dying. And because it was a nursing home, and the affliction had hit her suddenly, she was unable to get pain control, and she was in a lot of pain, but the nurses at the nursing home weren't authorized to give her what it would take to relieve that pain, and her nephew was there with her. And he was holding her hand and rubbing her brow and trying to ease her suffering. And do you know what? She started rubbing his hand and squeezing his hand to ease his suffering. I was really struck by that story. Because what she did, because he loved her and was there with her, he was present. She suddenly, because he was suffering, because his beloved aunt was in pain and was dying, she was suddenly there for him. I saw that with my own grandmother. My own grandmother got to the place in a nursing home where she just couldn't eat anymore. She wouldn't eat, she wouldn't drink, and the doctor said her body was shutting down. And I asked her, she wouldn't talk, and I asked her if she'd like her best friend in the nursing home to me to bring her by, and she nodded her head. So I brought the woman by in her wheelchair, and these two old ladies who were in their 90s grasped each other's hands and looked into each other's eyes without saying a word and communicated for 10 minutes. Intense love and caring from back and forth to each other. That was dignity. The idea that killing somebody, discarding them as if they were no more important than a bubblegum wrap, putting them down as if they were a horse that had broke its leg, to me is not dignity.
Tell us about the Right to Die movement.
Well, the Right to Die movement is a misnomer. There's two aspects of it. One of it has to do with whether somebody can refuse life-sustaining treatment. That's often called the right to die. I agree that people have a right not to be hooked up to machines and don't have to be. If you get cancer and you don't want chemotherapy, you have the right to say no, and you should have the right to say no. If you don't want surgery, you have the right to say no. If you don't want a respirator, you have the right to say no. If you don't want to be resuscitated, you can have a do not resuscitate order signed, and that's fine. That's not the right to die. That is the right not to have your body interfered with in a way that in which you do not wish. The other aspect of the Right to Die movement is this idea of euthanasia and assisted suicide. And that is not about a right to die. That is about a right to kill or right to make dead. And what that movement has been urging for 100 years now, they've been around for 100 years. They took a hiatus after World War II and were pretty quiescent because of the euthanasia horrors during the German period. But they, for 100 years now, they've been trying to pass laws to legalize killing by doctors or even by non-doctors. The idea of euthanasia used to mean the same thing as hospice now means, which is a good death. That is, one surrounded by loved ones, one where your pain is controlled, your spiritual needs are met, and so forth. We now call that hospice. It used to be called euthanasia. But the first thing and the thing that one of the tactics that the right to die, the euthanasia people, have been doing from the beginning is subverting words and meanings and definitions. So one of the first words that they subverted and redefined was euthanasia, turning that into killing, which it had not meant originally. What they want is an ever-expanding, and I'm speaking generally, there are some people who wouldn't go the whole route, but basically they want people who have serious illnesses, afflictions, or even despair without physical illness to be able to have a doctor kill them or have a doctor help them kill themselves. But in the end, it's about doctors giving lethal injections, as they do in the Netherlands. And I know that's a pretty broad statement, but I can prove it.
Now, the face that most people popularly will associate with assisted suicide, in particular physician-assisted suicide, is that of Jack Kevorkian. Tell us a little bit about him and his international counterparts. Let's begin this way. Did Jack Kevorkian kill only the terminally ill?
Well, that's how he, even today, is described by media, clueless mainstream media. He has never been somebody who restricted his activities to the terminally ill. 70% of the people who Jack Kevorkian helped kill were not terminally ill. During his campaign of assisted suicides, I was writing about this, speaking about this. The International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide, who recruited me to this work, by the way, they were writing about it and talking about it, and nobody listened. We were saying he's doing this, and yet the media, the mainstream media, continued this kind of clueless description. Let's tell what Jack Kevorkian really was. He is often described as a retired physician. He wasn't retired. He was unemployable. His last job was as an ambulance driver in California, which he could not keep. He was a physician, but he was not a physician who treated patients. He was a pathologist, and that's certainly an honorable profession. But pathologists, they test tissues and so forth. They might do autopsies. They do not treat living patients. Jack Kevorkian had not treated a living patient since his days in medical residency.
We've got only 1 minute here before the break, Wesley.
And then there's more to talk about it, but his moniker, his nickname, Dr. Death, did not come from his assisted suicide activities. It came during medical school when he would haunt the hospital wards looking for dying people to stare into their eyes and take their picture, because he was and is obsessed with death.
We'll talk more about Dr. Jack Kevorkian and his counterparts internationally, and we'll start walking through some of the common arguments that are made for euthanasia, for instance, or are made in the debate about euthanasia. For instance, well, euthanasia is a religious issue. We'll find out what Wesley Smith thinks about that when we come back from this break. Wesley Smith is a senior fellow for the Discovery Institute, an attorney for the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide, and the author of several books, including Forced Exit, The Slippery Slope from Assisted Suicide to Legalized Murder. Give us a call, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727, or visit our website and our forum at issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you enjoy listening to Issues Etc. on the weekends, did you know that you can listen to 12 new hours of Issues Etc. each week on the Internet? All you have to do is go to our website, issuesetc.org, click the worldwide KFUO logo, and there you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7, including 12 new programs weekly. The website address again, issuesetc.org.
Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. However, we are not funded by the church body. We're also not affiliated with Lutheran Hour Ministries or the Lutheran Layman's League. Issues Etc. is supported by listeners like you. Please help support this worldwide outreach by making a gift this week. Our address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Thanks for your prayerful consideration. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about euthanasia and assisted suicide with Wesley Smith. By the way, you can read several columns written by Wesley on our website, issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section, you'll find these resources, issuesetc.org. Wesley, before the break, you were telling us about Dr. Jack Kevorkian. Finish up what you had to say. He is not alone in this effort, is he?
No, in fact, he's in jail now, which is good news. He's doing 10 to 20 in the slammer in Michigan because he murdered a man named Thomas Yoke. That is, he lethally injected him and was found guilty of murder. He videotaped himself doing this, and then he took it to Mike Wallace of 60 Minutes, and he took it to Mike Wallace because Mike Wallace is a very enthusiastic supporter of euthanasia. So Mike Wallace immediately put it on television, 60 Minutes. And I'll never forget watching that a few years ago. Mike Wallace showing, the man nods off, and Mike Wallace saying, is he dead yet? And Jack Kevorkian saying, no, he's not dead yet. He's just such and such. And then Mike Wallace, is he dead now? And it was really despicable and disgusting. It also perpetuated a myth that one of the reasons Thomas Yoke wanted Jack Kevorkian to kill him was because he was afraid of choking on his own saliva. This is often said of people with Lou Gehrig's disease, that that's how they die, when that, in fact, is not how they die. If they get proper medical treatment, they do not choke on their own saliva. And one of the major arguments I have against the assisted suicide movement is they engage in statements such as that are wrong. I interviewed Dame Cicely Saunders, who founded the hospice movement, in her hospice at St. Christopher's in London. She has treated hundreds and hundreds of ALS patients, and she told me not one of them, not one single one, died choking on their own saliva. Moreover, There was a lawsuit involving a woman with what they call motor neuron disease in London, but it's the same thing as Lou Gehrig's disease, who had sued a few years ago to be able to have her husband help kill her without legal consequence because she wanted suicide because she had the same disease. She lost that lawsuit, and when she died, she did not choke on her own saliva as she had worried about because she got proper medical care. She actually died quietly in her sleep. Jack Kevorkian also helped kill five people who were not sick at all on their autopsies. At one point, he took the kidneys of one of his victims, a man named Joseph Tuschkowski, who was quadriplegic. He was not dying. He took his kidneys after assisting his suicide, then held a press conference and said, "I offer them for transplantation, first come, first serve." Even that did not turn the country against Jack Kevorkian. Time magazine held their 75th gala anniversary party and invited him as the celebrity of honor, where Tom Cruise went running up to shake his hand. And yet it gets worse. If you read Jack Kevorkian's book, Prescription Medicide, his ultimate goal was not the so-called compassionate assisted suicide. It was what he called obituary, that is, assisting suicide, euthanizing people, and as they are dying, conducting medical research upon them. I hate to say that on a Sunday night, but that is the truth of what he was after. Prior to his starting his work with sick and disabled people and dying people, he had gone to most of the prisons in the United States that have executions and spoken to condemned men and wardens, seeking the right to experiment on those people as they were being executed. When these wardens threw him out and said, "Never come back again," only then did Jack Kevorkian turn to sick and dying and disabled people. So the idea that he is somehow a modern pioneer, a compassionate blazer of a trail for tomorrow, is laughable if people will learn what he was really about. He was a ghoul.
Wesley, let's have you respond to some of the common arguments made in favor and deflections, I should say, not only arguments made in favor of euthanasia. The first one is it really comes from a Dutch doctor, Peter Admiral, you haven't quoted in your book, as saying, "There are no grounds for denying euthanasia other than religion." How do you respond?
Yes, Pieter Admiral was the pioneer of euthanasia in the Netherlands. He's killed many people. He's wrong. Many of the people who oppose euthanasia in this country and around the world are not religious at all in their orientation. For example, perhaps the most robust groups that have actually helped stop assisted suicide from spreading beyond Oregon in the United States have been the disability rights community. Disability rights activists, generally speaking, of course there are exceptions, but their general approach is absolutely secular. Their general politics are liberal, and in terms of abortion, because some people think you have to be pro-life to be opposed to assisted suicide, most disability rights activists are not pro-life. They say that they are the targets. They say, and I agree with them, and this is a thesis I make in Forced Exit, that euthanasia isn't really about compassion. It's about denying equality to sick and dying people. What you're saying is if you want to commit suicide, say, for a reason such as a divorce or a business collapse or your children dying, then we'll try to save your life. But if you feel suicidal because you've got cancer or you've been in a terrible accident and you're now quadriplegic, we'll say, well, let us hold your coat. That treats some people as less valuable than other people. And the disability rights folk, in a completely non-religious approach, say, wait a minute, we are in the crosshairs of this movement. We are the targets of this movement. People say it is better to be dead than disabled, so they will say, if one of our people wants to commit suicide, let us help you. And so those people are not religious. Nat Hentoff, who is another, many of your listeners may have heard of him, Nat Hentoff is an atheist. He writes for the Village Voice. He is known as a civil libertarian. He is one of the most fundamental voices against euthanasia and assisted suicide. Medical professionals, almost all medical professional organizations in the world outside of the Netherlands oppose euthanasia. And those folk do not come from a religious perspective. They come from a professional obligation perspective. Remember, the Hippocratic Oath, which is 2,500 years old, explicitly states that doctors are not to kill patients, even if asked.
Here's another one, Wesley, and this one is very subtle. And the argument is this, and you only have 2 minutes before the break. Guidelines. Guidelines will keep, if we put them in place for euthanasia, will keep people from abusing this technique.
Well, we're going to have to talk more than 2 minutes for that one, but guidelines protect virtually nobody. What guidelines are put in place for is not so much to protect, but to give the illusion of control. Because a lot of people get very queasy and a little worried, as well they should, about the idea of the radical notion. And think about how radical this is. We talk about it now so commonly, we forget what a radical idea this is. We are going to legitimize and legalize, if this movement gets its way, a swath of private killings. Now, people are not allowed to kill each other, except in very rare circumstances. Self-defense, where, and then only when deadly force is required for that. Defense of others under the same circumstances. I suppose a policeman, if it's deadly force is necessary. And and war, which is not a private killing, but if an illegal act of war. You're not allowed to consent to your murder, for example. There are people now on the Internet who are consenting to being tortured to death and even cannibalized. It's really despicable. But should we say, well, they decided they want it, they should be allowed to do it? Of course not. If we're going to have a decent moral society, you cannot allow killing. Now, when we get back from the back, I'll explain to you how the guidelines in the Netherlands were supposed to protect against abuse. And in 30 years since that began in that country, they've gone from killing terminally ill people who ask for it to chronically ill people who ask for it to disabled people who ask for it. These are way beyond what the guidelines were originally intended to permit. To people who aren't even physically ill but who are depressed who ask for it, that was a Supreme Court case in which a psychiatrist assisted the suicide of his patient who was suicidal not because she was ill, not because she was disabled, but because her children had died. And the Dutch Supreme Court said that was proper because suffering is suffering. It doesn't matter whether it's physical or whether it's emotionally based. It gets worse. We can talk about eugenic infanticide, which is now legal in the Netherlands. About 8% of all Dutch infants who die in the Netherlands each year are killed by doctors because they're born with birth defects or disabilities.
Wesley, let's take a break here. When we come back, we'll get the rest of the laundry list about how guidelines in euthanasia don't work.
What do we know about Dietrich Bonhoeffer other than his failed attempt to assassinate Adolf Hitler? What can we learn today from the life and times of this German theologian of the early 20th century? You'll find answers to these questions with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Till the Night Be Past. The book is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about this book on our website, issuesetc.org, and click the What's New section. Till the Night Be Past is a biography of Dietrich Bonhoeffer written by the late Theodor Kleinhans. In this book, you'll find out what motivated Bonhoeffer's classic writings, Life Together, and The Cost of Discipleship. This book is available for $15.99 plus shipping and handling. Till the Night Be Past, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July. For more information, call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Todd Wilkin here again. I'm talking with Pastor Paul McCain, interim president and CEO of Concordia Publishing House, based here in St. Louis. Paul, what's the current state of publishing, and Christian publishing in particular?
Well, with the economy the way it is, all publishing has been impacted by the downturn. And as I read the trade journals, it's interesting to note that many publishers are trying to identify ways to keep their prices down, even as their costs are increasing. The publishing industry is completely consumer-driven. You just have to walk into any large mega store like Barnes & Noble's, Borders, those types of stores to notice that. The Christian publishing industry faces very unique challenges. It's a large industry. A number of the largest publishers are publicly traded companies like Thomas Nelson. They do millions and millions and millions of dollars a year in business. I just recently read an interesting article in Publishers Weekly, which is kind of the trade Bible for the whole industry. And in the religion section, they point out that Christian publishers are most interested in meeting consumer demands for self-help books of all kinds. They say people would rather go to a bookstore than talk to their pastor, rabbi, or imam, and that's a big challenge.
So how is Concordia Publishing House different in the field of Christian publishing?
Concordia Publishing House exists to serve the publishing needs of our church body, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and we believe that as we do the best job we can possibly do in getting out materials that are faithful to the witness of the Lutheran Reformation, that we're not only serving our church, but also all Christians who find very appealing the message of Martin Luther, the great breakthrough of the gospel in the 16th century. The Lutheran Reformation is the oldest continuing evangelical movement in the history of the church, and it continues to this day, and we're very humbled by the opportunity we have at Concordia Publishing House to be what we believe to be the preeminent voice for the Lutheran Reformation in publishing in the English language. And all our materials strive to be faithful to God's Word and to our Lutheran confessions to get out clearly the gospel of Jesus Christ. We emphasize the teaching of the faith, how important it is to train people, to educate them, to inform them in the basics of Christianity. And all our materials, from Sunday school to academic books, strive to do that.
That's Pastor Paul McCain, Interim President and CEO of Concordia Publishing House, based here in St. Louis. If you'd like a free catalog from Concordia Publishing House, call them at 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or visit them on the web at www.cph.org. www.cph.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about euthanasia and assisted suicide. Wesley Smith is our guest. He's Senior Fellow for the Discovery Institute, attorney for the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide, and author of several books, including Forced Exit, The Slippery Slope from Assisted Suicide to Legalized Murder. You can purchase this book, Forced Exit, by calling Spence Publishing toll-free. Here's the number, 1-888-SPEN-PUB. That's 1-888-SPENPUB. Or you can order the book online at SpencePublishing.com. All one word, SpencePublishing.com. Spence is offering Forced Exit at a 50% discount. Wesley, before the break, you were talking about guidelines for euthanasia, how they don't work, and you said a good example is guidelines for euthanasia in the Netherlands.
Yes, the Dutch guideline, I just outlined some of the horrors that have been going on in the Netherlands. Let me add to them, and then I'll talk about the guidelines. In addition to killing terminally ill and chronically ill and disabled people who ask for it, being able to kill depressed patients who aren't sick who ask for it, I'll give you another example that was in a Dutch government-sponsored documentary. A young woman about 24 years old with anorexia in remission, and she's terrified that she's going to go back to abusing food, so she asks her doctor to kill her, and she tells the camera, "I'm so afraid I will go back to the old way. I'm just terrified. I just want to die." And the doctor says, "Okay," and he kills her. And the Dutch government found it perfectly acceptable. Can you imagine? But beyond that, and beyond the infanticide, in which, according to The Lancet, which is, I'll give you the site for that, Volume 350, July 26, 1997, 8% of all infant deaths are caused by doctors killing them. They're being killed because they're going to be disabled, among other reasons. This is infanticide based on eugenics. This is what German doctors did between 39 and 45 at a much larger scale in Germany than is occurring in the Netherlands, but the same act, and some doctors in Germany got hanged for it at Nuremberg, and now it's legal in the Netherlands. And plus, 1,000 Dutch patients a year or more are killed by Dutch doctors who haven't asked for it. It's called termination without request or consent. It's murder under Dutch law. Yet no Dutch doctor has ever been put in jail for it. Very, very, very few Dutch doctors have ever been prosecuted for it. The very few that have been prosecuted have mostly been found not guilty. And the couple, a handful, who've been found guilty have had no significant legal consequence and no professional consequence of any kind. I debated a Dutch ethicist in Lisbon in February at a Fulbright Commission event, and I pointed that out to him, what I just described, and I said, the law is completely ignored. And you know what he said? This is almost a quote. He said, well, of course we believe that the law should be there to tell the doctors good practice, but of course it should not be enforced. I knew it, but that was the first time I'd had a euthanasia advocate admit it. And now Dutch doctors in the Netherlands, because one recent Dutch doctor who killed a patient who had not asked was found guilty of murder and received like a 2-week suspended sentence, they are now saying, well, we should legalize this. The termination without request or consent if you report it to a coroner should not be against the law. And then when the Dutch government had legalized euthanasia formally 2 years ago, the first thing the Minister of Health said afterward was, you know, there are some old people who are tired of life who do not technically qualify for euthanasia. They should have a suicide pill available to them. You see what a culture of death the Netherlands has become?
Someone's going to say, Wesley, that's just the liberals in the Netherlands. They're notorious for these kind of things.
Wait a second. You know, when people say, well, it can't happen here, baloney. The Netherlands, for example, has much less financial problems in terms of their health care than we do. The Netherlands have doctors who make house calls. Every Dutch citizen has a doctor to call their own. They make their general practitioners. And they work for the government. I'm not advocating that style of health care by any stretch. But we have 44 million without health insurance. We have HMOs that make money by cutting costs rather than by providing services. It costs $40 for an assisted suicide, the drugs to kill somebody. It may cost $40,000 to treat them so they don't want to be killed. The force of gravity is obvious. And to say that that would never happen is to stick your head in the sand, in my view.
Now, very quickly, the Netherlands has guidelines. Why are they, in essence, just a sham?
Because that's all they were ever meant to be. And more importantly, by saying that killing is an acceptable answer to a cause or a few causes of human suffering, it soon quickly becomes seen as an acceptable answer to 100 causes. The reason being, you have put in force a fundamental shift in one's thinking, one's first principles, so that the force of gravity or the logical conclusions take you in a certain direction. If you say it is okay to kill the terminally ill because they are supposedly suffering, well, why not then disable people who may suffer far more than dying people and for far longer? The fact of the matter is, if suffering is the reason for killing, then you can't. Or how about elderly people who may live for 20 years but are lonely and are suffering the debilitations of old age? Or how about the woman the psychiatrist helped killed? She wanted to commit suicide because her children had died. She was never going to get over that kind of grief. She wanted to be buried between them. Now, what the Dutch Supreme Court said was that her suffering was so strong, which we can certainly understand, that death was the proper thing to do for her because there was no cure. Now, I know people who've lost children, and they never, quote, get over it, close quote, but with help and with time, they do go on with their lives. And what this woman needed was the ability to get through that horrible time. She needed a compassionate psychiatrist, someone who would suffer with her and help her. And she needed a compassionate society to suffer with her and help her until she found her footing again. Instead, she found a society and a psychiatrist who were willing to acknowledge, yes, your life isn't worth living, and to countenance her killing.
Folks, we're coming to you live this Sunday evening. It's July the 20th. The phone lines are open for your questions or comments on euthanasia and assisted suicide. 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. Wesley, someone is going to say, look, I think we need something like euthanasia in order to prevent doctors from just keeping patients alive forever. Your response?
Well, that shouldn't happen. People, as we described earlier, have the right to say no to unwanted medical treatment. Hospice, which is a compassionate service, is not about keeping people alive forever. It is about saying no to the life-extending treatments such as respirators and chemotherapy and things of that sort, and allowing nature to take its course, but not abandoning the patient to whatever the symptoms are, but controlling pain, controlling symptoms, providing spiritual support, providing social services. Volunteers come out to be with the hospice patient and family. I've been a volunteer. I know what that is. Sometimes you're with the patient. Sometimes you're doing housework, whatever the family needs because the family's in a crisis. When my father died of colon cancer, we had him in hospice, and I was able to get support through counseling before my father died because I'm an only child. My mother was furious because I had helped get Dad in hospice and accused me of abandoning my father, and I had to get some help to keep me going, to be strong enough for my father and for my mother, who realized after a period of time that, you know, that was her grief talking. That is a community-oriented, let nature take its course approach that also values making sure that suffering is alleviated. That's not the same thing as hooking people up to machines against their will, which used to occur and which has been stopped for the most part. And by the way, part of the reason, Todd, excuse me for being a bit cynical, that used to occur is that intensive care units used to be very big profit centers for hospitals. Because in the fee-for-service system we used to have, the every day in the intensive care unit made the hospital money. And then every time the doctors would come by to check on the patient, they could charge a consult fee. Today, with the Medicare payments diagnosis-related group, the hospital gets a lump sum payment. If that patient gets out earlier than the lump sum, which is based on an average of a patient based on diagnosis, they make a little money. If it's about the same because the costs have been cut so low, they probably break about even. But if the patient's in the hospital a few days longer or a couple weeks longer than the payment would cover, they lose money. The same thing with HMOs and managed care. I mean, we talk about euthanasia and assisted suicide in the debates and in the advocacy and in the newspaper articles as if the world was ideal. We always have the ideal patient who has been with a doctor for 50 years, and the doctor and the patient trust each other completely, and a loving family, and something where pain cannot otherwise be controlled, which is a false premise. But the reality of how euthanasia and assisted suicide would be practiced, not only in the United States, but if you read some of the books coming out of the Netherlands, read Dr. Herbert Hendon's book, who has described it, who is against it, and Bert Kaiser, who wrote Dancing with Mr. D. He is a nursing home doctor. The real world is family dysfunction, elder abuse, in this country, financial issues with regard to health care, inheritance issue, life insurance. We never talk about how it would be practiced in the real world. Every family is Ozzie and Harriet or Leave It to Beaver, and every doctor is Marcus Welby. If that were true, assisted suicide would be wrong. But it isn't true. And the guidelines don't protect anybody. And I also want your listeners to think of this. Can I tell you a story about my mother?
I tell you what, I want to save that story until after the break, because
sure,
I want to give you enough time to tell it in full. We're going to go to a break here in just a moment. Wesley Smith is our guest. We're talking about euthanasia and assisted suicide. I think you're picking up, if you're listening carefully, and even if you're not, upon the passion with which Wesley approaches this issue. Folks, if you'd like to receive a free tape of this hour and the next hour's internet-only broadcast on euthanasia and assisted suicide with Wesley Smith, there's only one way to do so. Contact the local church that sponsors Issues Etc. in your area. They'll send you a free cassette recording of this broadcast. Get a pen and a piece of paper ready, because you should hear an announcement with a phone number and a mailing address right after the Issues Etc. close theme. When we come back, we'll take a couple of your phone calls and conclude this hour's conversation with Wesley Smith on assisted suicide and euthanasia. 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. We have a couple phone lines open. Call during this break. 1-800-730-2727. Wesley Smith is our guest. We'll be right back.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Pro-life leader Dr. Lawrence White on why you should support Issues Etc.
In a culture that has forgotten about the truth of God, God's people need to stand upon His Word firmly and faithfully. Issues Etc. raises the questions that are in discussion in our society and in our church today in a way that highlights the truth of God amid all the error and the falsehood of men. This is a program that is making a difference in our society, in our church, in our culture, to the glory of the Lord Jesus Christ.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift this week. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can make a credit card donation by calling our resource line at 1-800-737-0172.
Next week on Issues Etc., we'll discuss the priesthood of all believers with Professor Larry Rast of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. What role do lay people play in the life of the church? If all Christians are priests, does that mean the church doesn't need pastors? Is every member a minister? We'll talk about it next week on Issues Etc. with Professor Larry Rast. Now, if you'd like to know what we'll be discussing throughout the summer, check out our website, issuesetc.org. Oh, and while you're there, be sure to read about our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July. It's called Till the Night Be Past, The Life and Times of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. It's an excellent biography on this martyr and German theologian of the early to mid-20th century. You can order the book online at our website, issuesetc.org, or you can call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. Ask to receive the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Till the Night Be Past, The Life and Times of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. 1-800-325-3040. The book is $15.99 plus shipping and handling, 1-800-325-3040. Wesley, tell us the story about your mom that you wanted to begin before the break.
My mother, a few years ago, needed a hip replacement. And I live in the San Francisco Bay Area. My mother lives in Los Angeles. And I was saying to my mother, come up here and have it. You know, we have a front bedroom. My wife and I will take care of you. We'll get a hospital bed in there. You can spend the 8 weeks it takes to recuperate with us. My mother was saying, well, you know, I'd rather recuperate in my own house. I said, fine. In that case, if that's what you decide, I'll come down and be with you. The only thing that I request is that we get another phone line so I can do my work. And one day she called me. We're kind of going back and forth on this. And she called me and she said, I've got it. I know. I've got the answer. I said, what? She said, I'll go into a nursing home. And I said, Ma, are you out of your mind? And you know what she said to me, Todd? She said, thank God. I just didn't want to be a burden. Now, let's change the topic just a little bit. And my mother has something more serious than a hip, needing a hip replacement. And she says, you know, maybe I should have assisted suicide. And if I said to her, Todd, well, you know, Ma, that's your choice, she'd want to kill herself. Because what I would be saying to her, even though I might not mean it, because I've been picking up by osmosis all the society saying, yes, killing is good, what I might be saying to her is, yes, you know, your worst fears about your life, Mother, are true. You are a burden. You will die in pain. You aren't as lovable as you once were. You will cause a financial drain. I do want that house that's all paid for. We wouldn't mean it that way. Some of us might, but most of us wouldn't mean it that way. But that is the message that we would be sending by saying, yes, if you want that, okay.
Our phone numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. That's 1-800-730-2727. James, calling from San Jose, is listening on KFAX. James, welcome
greetings
to Issues Etc.
Greetings, Wesley.
Hello.
Praise the Lord today.
Thank you.
I was getting into some bioethics for a while, and I was going to do some hospice ministry until they wanted me to sign a contract agree in with their philosophy that death's the natural part of life. But When it comes to infanticide, I usually, and a lot of us try to prove that it's wrong by first proving that it has life and that it is life before at the moment of conception. And with euthanasia, I'm wondering, how do I prove, just thinking in steps ahead, it hasn't, I haven't been asked the question yet, but when it comes to animals, how do I say, you know, if I'm using the distinction that it's a human and it has quality, how can we
are you asking the question which I often hear, well, we euthanize animals, why shouldn't we euthanize people?
Yeah, what do I tell people if they ask me that?
Good question, James.
That is a good question. I do write about that issue in Forced Exit. You know, when I was a kid, I asked my mother that question when we had to put a cat to sleep. I forgot the circumstances. And she said, well, first off, their animals were people. There is, if we cannot accept that there is a higher moral status for human life than for animal life, we're doomed as a society. And there are people in bioethics, as you know, as you just described, and in the animal liberation movement that wish to say there is no distinction between humans and animals, that we're all just, animals in the forest. And therefore, what counts as the ability to be rational and whether you're a person or not a person, I guess we don't have time to get into all that. But secondly, let's take a look at how and why most animals are euthanized. It isn't because there isn't something that can be done to alleviate their suffering. It's because it would be too expensive, or because they become incontinent and start peeing on the couch and start peeing on the rugs, and because they've got a kidney infection or because they're ill, and so we then euthanize them then. Or it's because they're no longer wanted, and they're in pounds, and there's mass euthanasia of those animals. We treat animals different than people. We shoot horses when they break their leg. Are we going to start treating people like animals? Are we going to start reducing human medicine to the level of veterinary care? That's not putting down veterinary care, but there are different ethical standards for veterinary care than there are for human medicine. And if we start saying that because we put down a cat who has started peeing on the furniture because it's sick, that we should put Granny out because she needs a Depends, we're in big trouble.
Wesley, last question here with about a minute and a half before we have to wrap it up. A person is going to say, but this is what I want. I don't want the machines. I don't want the illness. This seems the easiest way out and the way that's going to give me the most dignity in my death. I'm a young guy, but I already know that if things get bad, this is what I want. Your response?
Well, you know, probably that person would change his mind if he got proper care. But even if he didn't, we are not islands unto ourselves. We are not trees standing next to each other. We're part of a forest. If somebody is killed in this society, it affects all of us. It doesn't just affect the person killed, even if that person consents to be killed. When I described earlier that there are people now in society, and I've got the news stories to prove it, there was a woman who on the internet had become fantasized about being tortured to death. And she found somebody on the internet who wanted to torture someone to death, and they agreed together that that would occur, and it did. Should that be, oh, well, it was her choice, for heaven's sake? Now, I know that's an extreme case, but there really isn't that much difference between that and saying, as someone else told me on one of these shows I've been on, well, if I ever lose the ability to climb rocks, I want someone to be able to kill me.
Wesley Smith, thank you very much for being our guest on Issues Etc.
Thank you.
Folks, we will be continuing this discussion on euthanasia and assisted suicide live in the next hour on the internet. Now, you can listen by going to our website, issuesetc.org. When you get there, click on the worldwide KFUO logo you'll see there. You won't be able to hear this next hour on the radio, only on the internet, issuesetc.org. Now, we'll also be taking your phone calls in the next hour, 1-800-730-2727. We're going to send the best callers in the next hour a copy of Wesley Smith's book called Forced Exit, The Slippery Slope from Assisted Suicide to Legalized Murder. So call during this break, 1-800-730-2727, and we'll be responding to your emails as well from our Issues Etc. forum issuesetc.org. Go there yourself, click on the What's New section, and you'll find the Issues Etc. forum where you can post a question or a comment for Wesley Smith in the next hour. 1-800-730-2727. We will let you stay on the line to hear the response to your question or your comment. 1-800-730-2727. Do we want to be treated this way? Do you want to be treated this way? As though when your life isn't everything that it used to be, when your abilities are curtailed, maybe your mental capacity is curtailed, or your physical abilities, or just your sense of well-being, do you want others to treat you this way? I want you to think about what that would be saying about yourself, what that would be saying about you right now. Are you simply the sum of your mental abilities, your physical abilities, or how happy you feel at any given moment? Isn't there more to being a person, a human being, someone who does have dignity in life than just those things? Is your dignity just something that attaches to you as long as you can get up out of a chair or walk across a room or speak or even think clearly? No. It's something you were born with, and it's something, regardless of how curtailed your capacities are, that you die with. And it depends in no way whatsoever upon what you can do or whether or not you can think or the level of your abilities. If it does, it could all be taken away from you today. And it wouldn't really be your decision, would it? The dignity we have as those who bear the image of God, our Creator, has given this to us. And assisted suicide does not enhance that dignity. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen to Pastor Todd Wilkin weekly on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. 1-800-737-0172. Visit us this week on the World Wide Web. Our website address, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.